This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 140, sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service and Netflix.
You can come and see me, but I don't glow in the dark, so you're going to have to learn to use a little night vision. Then you must decide who resides in your heart, and babe, I know that's not an easy decision. Oh, I went bananas when I spoke to you on the telephone. I feel like enemy, you're all alone. There's the demons in you, and there's demons in me. Is it too dark for you to see?
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 140. My name is Connor. I'm here with Ron.
Josh. I always go last. It's not like it's a surprise.
You decided that. We didn't decide that. Ron. Hello.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website, and we talk about it on this podcast along with other books of the week and various topics of interest. And before we get started, we'd like to remind everyone this is a review show. And we will be talking about things that happened in this week's book, so we'll spoil things. So if you don't want to be spoiled, pause the show, read your books, come back. It'll be much more enjoyable. This week, Ron Richards had the pick.
Thank you, Connor. And before I get started, let me just say, it is hot.
Ron's back on the East Coast where the heat is.
Oh my word! I think I'm going a little soft in San Francisco because it's like 95 degrees outside, and it's not pretty. I'll be honest with you.
He's not kidding.
No, I'm not.
And you gotta shut the windows and shut the stuff off to record these. So this is
no air
this
conditioning.
Is what we do for you. I'm not shirtless yet.
Give I almost time. Was decided to be too weird, so I put a shirt on.
It's taking a turn. Anyway, all right. So I had the pick of the week, and if you go to
I thought you were going to preface this by saying the week was crappy.
No, I don't know if the week was crappy because I read good. Well, it was the week was different for me, and the reason why it was different for me was that I only bought 10 books, and I found myself, you know, I spent $25-$30. It was a little change in pace for me. I was
sounds
done.
Like you're complaining about that.
No. I didn't quite understand it. It's like what? It's kind of like when you after flying first class for a long time when you go back to coach and you're just like, what is this? These seats are so close together. It's
Let's bring up other topics that Connor and I don't know anything about. You know when like you've been eating like sort of top shelf caviar and then you have to go back down to the regular farm raised beluga, that is not as good. Also, have you like I don't know if you've been in sort of the newer model roles, but they don't really compare to a lot of the engineering that was going on in the early 90s.
Hey, I got upgraded to first class a couple times ago.
That's pretty nice.
One time I got into premium economy.
Weird. No, I don't fly first class. Whatever. I fly JetBlue, so it's all the same there. Nonetheless, so yeah, the week wasn't crappy. I mean, I the books I bought were okay. They were good, but it was kind of interesting because I really did struggle with what to pick. And of my 10 books, I had like 3 or 4 books that I was wrestling with. And you know, I netted out on the sword number 9 by the Luna Brothers from Image Comics at $2.99. And the reason why is because is I think I'm in the minority amongst the three of us, but I really like the Luna Brothers. I really like their art. Despite like something like their last book, Girls, not being the greatest throughout the entire run, I still enjoyed it and I still enjoyed buying it and all that kind of deal. And it's interesting though because you know I first discovered the Luna Brothers with their first book from Image called Ultra, which is about like a female superhero. It was a kind of high concept kind of thing. It was like she worked at a company of superheroes type thing. It was good, but it was only like 5-6 issues. And then
I liked that. It was good.
Yeah, it was really good. And then Girls came out, and I knew they were doing something different. I knew it was going to be a little more, I guess, horror or thrillery or whatever. But oh my god, that book just kept on going. And I thought it really suffered as they, you know, they would. It was 20. I think it was 24 issues at the end of the day, and they would get like 6 issues and they get some momentum and then they would slow it down and they'd introduce a new subplot or introduce a new character and like most of the times the subplots weren't benefiting the main plot of the story. And I just thought it was kind of like it wasn't self-indulgent, but it was just kind of not there was no economy of storytelling. The Sword at issue number 9 isn't quite there yet, but there have been moments in the 9 issues so far that it's come close to it. But I was glad to see that issue number 9 was the kind of issue that I would expect from them that thrust the story forward, stuff actually happens, and it actually, you know, like, was exciting to read. The premise of the book is that there are these 3 kind of Greek god-like characters who are pursuing, they're trying to find an ancient sword that is supposedly belongs to them that has great power, and they think they find it, and they go to this family in the suburbs, and they think that the father of the family has it, and he claims to never don't know who they are and doesn't know what they're talking about. And so they slaughter him and his whole family, and they leave for dead the daughter of the guy who's in a wheelchair, and she falls into the basement trying to hide, and she uncovers the sword. Turns out he had the sword, and she grabs the sword, and it heals her. She can walk, and then she's got powers. She can jump really high and fight and use the sword, and she gets into a fight with a bunch of the minions kind of things, and then the cops come, and they see her and her dead family and her with the sword, and they think she did it, so she goes on the run. And so she's on the run, she's got a friend of hers and some dude they picked up along the way who was a student of her father's, and they've pieced together over the past 9 issues what's going on, that the sword has powers, that these Greek godlike people are after them, and she wants revenge for them killing her family. So you've got the Greek gods guy chasing her, trying to get the sword, you've got her then in turn trying to chase the Greek god guys to get revenge, and we've had that for the past 8 issues. Now at the issue 9, she gets into a fight with one of the Greek god guys, the Zarakos or whatever it is, yeah, Zachros, and she's in the Bahamas, and turns out he's in the Bahamas, and he finds her before she does, and there's a huge fight in the women's bathroom, and he's got powers over water, so he, like, there's a great scene where the water comes rushing out of the toilets, and it, you know, kind of builds a wall around them, and then he kind of kicks the crap out of her, and then it ends with a strong cliffhanger of her standing there with the sword ready to fight, and it's just like this, whereas Ultra was like kind of modern take on superheroes, and Girls was like horror, that sort of thing, this feels like, you know, action movie, you know, action movie with little ties to history.
How much for sword? How much you pay for sword? What, 2,000-3,500? What?
So it was a lot of fun, and, you know, I mentioned this in the mini that came out, you check that out, but it's like, if you're looking for something different in comics, I would recommend the Luna Brothers, purely because their approach to the art and their approach to the stories are really unlike anything else that's being told out there, and also because this week the first trade paperback came out, I think collecting the first 7 issues or so you could catch up really quickly, and it's a different thing to read, and it's a lot of fun.
For some reason, I've just never gotten around to reading any Luna Brothers stuff. I don't have an opinion on it one way or the other, really. Just, I guess I've always gotten sort of, some people liked it, but a generally lukewarm reaction to it. So unless I hear people thinking that, oh, this is really amazing stuff, but I've heard enough people that were like, nah, it was okay.
Yeah.
That I never really went after it, I guess.
Yeah. I think they're slowly building a fan base or an audience, you know, because I know people who love them. And I think precisely because of that they're doing stories that aren't like anything else that's really out there. The Girls thing was tough, though, because people ask me, should I check this out, whatever, and I have a hard time recommending Girls because it did just waver for me so much. But the thing is, I know people who bought that big, you know, kind of ultimate, you know, absolute edition that Image put out of it, the hardcover, and oversized, the art is just beautiful, and it's I know people who don't regret buying that book at all. So say we will. I mean, I think that they're a unique set of creators that are doing something different that are worth kind of watching. They did do that one book at Marvel, the Spider-Woman origin with Bendis, which was good. It wasn't, you know, mind-blowing, but I liked it.
You know, she was a Skrull.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if you...
It's kind of curious what they're going to do with that book, with the legendary Spider-Woman book that him and Maleev are going to do, right?
Well, it's when she's going to come back.
You think?
And it'll actually be her.
You think?
Unless they
that
do, like...
That book's never getting made.
No, it's not. That's true.
Sad. But yeah, I assumed I was the only person reading the sword.
Yes.
Yeah.
You assumed correctly.
I'm sorry.
This is the monologue show.
Yeah, this is totally the monologue show.
Look at the rundown. I see that this is the monologue show.
Well, here's the deal. Well, so the other book that was in the running for the POW was, shock of shocks, was Jonah Hex number 33.
I would have fallen out of my chair had that been the case.
Well, and here, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
And I'm sore, so I'm glad you didn't pick it and I didn't fall out of the chair.
I don't want to know why you're sore. I'll tell you why I didn't pick it. So it's Jonah Hex number 33, written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, with art by Darwin Cook. Now, right, for those of you who know me, I'm not really into the Westerns, whereas Josh and Connor are, and that's cool.
Yeehaw.
Okay. but I will, I you know, Darwin Cook's drawing it, I'm there. I opened this book up, and the first thought I had in the first 3 pages was...
Text.
Oh, there's a lot of words. A lot of words. I felt this was really overwritten. And the art was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. Darwin is one of my favorite artists, and he's amazing. And the several-page scene where he's taking down all the Mounties, like the 3 pages where he attacks the fort, was just beautiful visual storytelling, and the art was great. But I couldn't get over the large amount of text throughout the entire issue.
I liked it. I felt like it was dense, and it was a different kind of story that they usually tell. It was like, it was through this guy's, this mute kid's head.
Right.
And it was more like he was writing a book about this, or a travelogue or something. I liked that it was different than what their normal style was. It was different. They did write it more for Darwin Cook than their normal.
Normally, all that text would have bothered me, but I got the point of it. I mean, the fact is, the kid's mute. He doesn't talk, so he becomes a writer. He becomes a storyteller. And in the style of that time, they sort of overwrote a bit. The sort of benefit of it that I actually thought was interesting is that I ended up spending longer on the pages.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I got to look at the art for longer, because otherwise you're just sort of flipping through it and moving around. And literally at one point while I was reading this book, I went, whew, that's really good looking. Like, yeah. I was just like, man, that's really – and it was when the sort of snow started up.
Yeah.
And the pages got really, really full. And another thing I absolutely loved about this was that the thing that Jonah Hex does is that you're constantly waiting for his redemption. That's, sorry, I'm sick. There you go. I don't know how I got a cold, but I did. You're constantly waiting for his redemption, and like
it's never going to happen.
Love you're never going to get.
Yeah.
It's so at the end you're like, well, maybe now he smacks the kid.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, this so flies in the face of everything where I've ever said, well, you should probably try to relate to or like the main character. He's such a jerk, but the thing is, you want to like him, or you want him to like you. I'm not sure what it is.
Right. I mean, the gist of the story being that a kid and his dad are out hunting, the kid's dad dies, Jonah Hex stumbles upon, saves the kid, then the Mounties find Jonah Hex, and they try to kill him, and Jonah Hex gets his revenge, and you think, you know, in any other Western, he takes the kid under his wing, and then they go have adventures together, but like you said, he smacks him and leaves him for dead.
Well, I mean, I didn't think he was going to take him with him and have adventures with him, but I didn't think he would actually just hit him. I mean, the kid's had a hell of a day, and he saved your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's Jonah Hex. That's why you love him, because he is that hard man. Besides, the kid learned a valuable lesson about life, mm-hmm. and that is that life is hard. Pick up a rifle.
I got to say how much I respect Palmiotti and Gray for just continually not giving us that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what, Mike? The writer instinct in them somewhere must say, you know, somewhere like, here, well, we have to have him do something good, and they have to keep going, no. No, he must continue to be a huge bastard.
What I want to know is, where did he get a team of dogs of a dog sled?
He knows lots of Indians. He's sort of friendly with those guys.
He was raised by Apaches.
So, yeah. And so they've got timber wolves to drag a sled.
Yes. Apaches and snake eyes all have timber
wolves. Wolves and dogs are difficult to draw, and even a couple,
man, that wolf at the end.
Yeah.
With the teeth.
In here, I was like, "Ooh, Darwin, you didn't quite get it." But I've been listening to artists. I've seen a couple of artists say that like wolves and dogs and horses are really, really difficult to draw.
I've been listening to Around Comics.
I guess that was it. But yeah. Like, I was noticing it in this.
Yeah.
I also felt like his art was a little heavier. Like he altered his style just a bit. The inking was like he did a rougher style, which worked with the storytelling.
I definitely got that same feeling.
It wasn't as clean and big as like say New Frontier. It was more dirty, which was nice.
Well, if you look at the coloring, I mean, like specifically like the sequence where they throw him in the water, you know, and like just the way that it I mean, because it's a winter tale, so it felt, even, you know, as we're sitting here in 95 degrees weather, the book felt cold.
Yeah, no,
you know,
absolutely.
I think that came from the color palette and from, you know,
Dave Stewart.
Yep.
One of the best.
What was interesting to me was that they made the Mounties the bad guys. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Well, they are Canadian. I mean,
well, I know. But, well, just because Cook was like, you have to do, you know, you're gonna. He told us, you know, you got to do a Canadian Mountie story. So I figured, well, they would probably.
He's not one for authority.
Yeah,
and was very happy to do a story where the Mounties were bad guys. From what I've read,
they get stabbed with an icicle pick. Like that was just great.
He doesn't like the police.
Yeah,
that's true.
Oh, Darwin. It was a good story. It was a good. I mean, it just didn't. I mean, it didn't grab me. I think any other week, either you guys probably would. Was this your pick or?
Wow. Maybe.
Wow.
I did not have a clear pick this week. That's kind of
no. I didn't either. Yeah, I didn't.
Kind of like ugh.
It was a rough week.
I definitely had a lot of books I liked, but there wasn't like the book that was like, this is the book. I'm very glad I didn't have to pick.
Could have been
book.
Jonah Hex. It could have been a couple other books we're going to talk about, but there wasn't one that was clearly you read it and you go, that's the one. Even Buffy the Vampire Slayer 16.
Ooh, I got fighting words for Buffy.
Okay.
I found myself disgusted at the end of this issue, and I don't know what it was, and then I figured it out, and that nothing against Carl Moline, but I want George's Janty back.
Yeah, but you didn't read Frey, did you?
Well, no, I didn't read Frey, but
he's the guy from Frey. He's the Frey.
Oh, okay,
artist.
Well, I have Frey. You lent it to me. I'm going to read it, so I get this. And I was able to read the story, okay. But to me, this felt like after the fantastic last arc that we had, this felt like a bit like the air being let out of a balloon.
It definitely wasn't as good as the last arc, but I mean the reason I didn't have a problem with the art, even though in a couple of panels it was really bad, but overall I thought it was good. Was because he's the Frey artist, so you know it's a nice touch to have the Frey story be drawn by the Frey artist. Yeah. But there was a couple of panels where like there was one of Willow in the plane where her nose is like humongous. But
there's one of when Buffy sees Dawn as Dawn's become a Minotaur or whatever it is. There's the one shot of a couple shots of Buffy though. So like I was like, oh, you know.
Yeah. No, but it's just, I mean, it works within the context if you liked Frey, if you're a Frey fan, the Frey story drawn by the Frey artist makes sense. It was fun. It just wasn't like, you know. It would have been, anything would have come after that last arc would have been hard though.
Yeah, it felt like a big letdown to me, and I got very upset by it.
You should read the Frey book; you might like it better.
Oh no, I'm going to. Yeah,
so. He has gotten better since Frey. He's better here.
Yeah. Well,
is there an end to this arc? Like this, because this is supposed to be the eighth season, right? So
I guess
there like
22 or 23? I guess maybe or
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. We should find out. It was important to note that the Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 16, it was written by Joss Whedon. And it was funny because I knew that going into it, and I was just like, I kind of miss Drew Goddard.
he's really he brings a touch of magic that Whedon is. Look, Whedon's very good. He's one of my favorite writers. But Drew Goddard brought something special to that last.
Well, honestly, I feel like Whedon's kind of. I mean, like I think Whedon's great and I think he's fantastic. But after Runaways finally finished and that was a big letdown, and then with this, it's like, man, maybe not everything he touches is gold.
You could just stay on X-Men forever.
Yeah, no, exactly. Stay on Astonishing X-Men, please.
Although I like the Dawn turning into a Minotaur. That was pretty funny.
Though. Yeah, that was.
I don't think Runaways would have been that bad if we had gotten it pretty regularly.
It was all over. I don't know. The time travel story, I didn't really.
Yeah, but it was because of that, it was very confusing. I mean, I felt the exact same confusion about Astonishing X-Men.
Really?
It's just, for a while, I mean, I used to come back into every issue of Astonishing X-Men like, who are these people and what's going on?
I never had that problem with Astonishing X-Men.
Well, okay. I did.
That's okay. Yeah, no, sorry. I mean, it happens. I mean,
but I really think that the delays on that, the delays on that really hurt it.
No, it definitely didn't help. That's for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Oh man, there's one shot of Buffy eating that's just not good.
Yeah, but that's his style. Yeah. I mean, look, I miss Joe Gentry's too, but it makes sense. You know, this is the kind of thing you normally would like. If there was a book where a guest star came in and that guest star's artist drew it, you'd be all over it if you knew that.
Yeah,
you
true, right. I mean? No, if there's context. Yeah, but I just thought it was funny because, for the past 15 issues reading Buffy, it's always been about the writing, and yeah, the art's okay, whatever, and then I found myself missing George Gentry. So
I've always thought George Gentry was a big contributor. He was 50% of why I liked that book so much. Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, so whatever. But the Buffy train rolls on. Oh, Buffy.
It's still very good.
Yeah.
Did you give up on the show? Are you still watching the show? Or did you stop?
Oh no, I just finished season two actually finally, and I got.
Oh my god! You've had that set for 2 years.
No, well the problem is the TV season got in the way, and then there was the writer's strike, and I watched a couple more. And I live a busy life. And it hasn't been 2 years. It's been like a year. No, it hasn't been 2 years. No, because the comic's only been coming out. This is 16 issues. So it's a year and a half, maybe. No, but that said, the thing with the Buffy show, and I know this is a little off topic, but I think you'll indulge me for a moment. The thing with the Buffy show, at least through the first two seasons, is that unlike a show like Lost or like Heroes to a certain degree, or the other TV shows that I like, insert TV show here, Buffy hasn't grabbed me with that, oh my god, I need to watch the next episode feeling.
Right.
That other shows have, and that was the problem I had when I watched it on TV. I remember when I remember when Buffy was in college and she went out with that guy who looked like Nick Lachey.
I stopped watching at that point.
Yeah,
that's
when I started watching. I think it was senior year of college, and I started watching it there, and it didn't. And I was like, and I went out and I missed the week, and I forgot to tape it, and I was just like, oh well. Like I wasn't like bummed, like it didn't grab me. But that said, the end of season two was really good. Like, love Jamie Marsters. I love Spike. He was awesome. Dave Bornaz is awesome. Like, I see the pieces falling into place. So I'm gonna dive right into season three and watch that really quickly. See if I missed the opportunity to get the momentum. It just doesn't feel crucial to me.
I understand.
Yeah.
So. I felt that way halfway. That's why I stopped watching it with 4 or 5, yeah. Whatever.
So it's not like The Shield.
No, or so I hear. I don't watch The Shield.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard.
If you did, you'd want to watch the next one immediately.
Well.
To detriment of your own sleep for a week.
Us and your father were wrong. All right. Batman 678, I'm very curious to hear what everyone thought of.
That's a good question.
Well, I didn't read
that's
it,
a
so.
Very. Oh, I did. but when I closed it, I went, what the hell just happened? But looking back through it now, I mean, there was, I think for me, there was parts of this book that were very lucid and interesting, but I don't know how they got to where they were. Like, I kind of do. It's almost like Morrison is skipping a bunch of stuff and sort of just dropping us along the next part of the path, and then we have, you have to fill in the middle on how we got there.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, like, all of a sudden, Batman's wandering the street on Smack or something like that, and I was like, I couldn't remember exactly how we got there. I got that he was there. And then he communed with a dead man, a dead junkie. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what all these things have to do with one another.
He's definitely skipping stuff, and it's an interesting choice to make, although I'm not having a problem filling the blanks in. This issue is basically one long drug-induced haze where Bruce Wayne was injected with some sort of weaponized crystal meth or something. What was it? Something strange?
Something
like that.
Like that, yeah.
Weapons-grade crystal meth, street heroin. Both of them. Fantastic. So Batman is walking around with a dead guy. He's having hallucinations about past adventures that were retconned out by Crisis on Infinite Earths. That's the whole last page was from an old Batman comic. And then the Robin dies at dawn in the notebook. That's an old Batman comic story.
Oh, see, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, so he's hallucinating about stuff that's been retconned out by the Crisis event.
Okay. Because this book is not written for someone who's a casual reader, I don't think.
No, well, as we talked to Grant Morrison in that show, and he said he was bringing in everything.
Yeah.
Everything from the first appearance to now. So basically, the whole 70-plus years, 69 years of history is fair game here. So, yeah, pretty much.
I guess, but, I mean, who does that really serve?
Not many.
Not many. I mean, so really, like, think about it. Especially, I just wonder how wise of a business decision it is for DC at this point, you know, when they've got this movie that's arguably going to be gigantic, you know, to make Batman almost incomprehensible. At least this version of it. Detective Comics, you know, a different animal altogether.
Well, I mean, that's a whole long discussion with it. I mean, they didn't like the initial Final Crisis script. And they said it. That's what caused them to freak out. They almost lost Grant Morrison again. They don't really have many people left they can lose, so they have to kind of indulge him, and this is what they get. You know, it's not an easy answer.
And then at the end, like, and this is in continuity because they fucked up Dick Grayson.
Yeah. I mean, it's as incontinuity as anything is, you know? None of it really goes together.
And I was kind of like, okay, I was rolling with it. I mean, I'll be honest, like, it really, I mean, it sort of bothers me to see Bruce Wayne like this.
So, this isn't the first time he's been a drug addict. He was a drug addict in the 90s. He was hooked on the drug that made Bane a big.
He injected
himself with that stuff, and he was a drug addict for a while on that. So this is not totally without
precedent. And that's fine, but like it's funny to this guy who is in absolute control of himself and all this stuff, you know, it's disturbing, I think, a little bit to watch him be in this sort of weak position and this other guy, Honor, is you know, guiding him around, and he's just kind of confused and lame, and it's like, well, is there any of actual Bruce Wayne in there, you know?
Well, that's part of that. I think it's supposed to be disturbing. That's what the point is.
And then I get to the last page, and I don't get that at all.
That was a reference to an old Batman story, which,
right,
again, you know,
right.
At the end of the day, I think like Final Crisis, like a lot of s'mores and stuff, so we won't be able to really judge how successful he is until the story's wrapped up and we see if it all makes sense or it doesn't.
Sure.
Whether we get the filth or we get something else, we'll find out.
this one's it's a rough read. I there are bits of it, like I said, there are pages and stuff in it that are really good. It almost feels to me like I can't put my finger on it. I can't say I'm enjoying it, but I'm not mad at it. I don't want to sit. Maybe it's one of those things where I'm blaming myself. Like, you should be enjoying this. You should be getting this.
I ain't mad at you, baby. Well, next week will be interesting because next week is the Detective Comics RIP tie-in. So we'll see if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like,
I'll be the litmus test for that.
We'll see if you know, other writers writing about what's happening here, you know, how that works.
Yeah, they're at home going, I don't know what Grant's doing. I don't get it at all.
Help.
Astonishing X-Men number 25, written by Warren Ellis, art by Simone Bianchi. So begins the next chapter of the Astonishing X-Men title. It was announced last year at San Diego. Whedon casting.
1 year ago.
1 year ago in a couple of weeks.
This month.
Yeah. So I'm curious to hear what y'all think of it.
I don't acknowledge this comic's right to exist, but I did I did not buy it, but I did read Ron's copy.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be able to talk about it. At least I wanted to be able to read one issue to make sure that I wasn't like going to be wrong, and I was really glad to not have wasted money on this comic.
All right.
I'll go you one better. Actually, I was planning on reading it, and then I talked to Connor. And then I kept putting it off, and I haven't read it. Because I really I didn't expect to enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
And so after Connor very adamantly was like, you don't, it's fine. I had no desire to read it, and I just didn't get to it.
All right, so you're out, so you go back on the bench. So Connor, what didn't you like about it?
It was basically what I was expecting, was Warren Ellis doing work for Higher Superhero stuff, which was... Yeah. You know, not his A game. His sort of, he's almost writing a parody of himself. Everybody was quippy. Everybody was talking like Warren Ellis characters talk, and in superhero comics, which is different from how he when he's really writing with stuff like Fell and stuff. You know, stuff that he really is into. You can tell the difference. The tone was just completely off. I was actually talking to iFanboy writer Paul about this, and he said he felt like his issue was missing pages, and I felt that really encapsulates it. I felt like it was just too confusing. There was stuff that happened. I was like, what? But not even between last issue and this issue, but in the issue itself. It didn't make sense.
Right. Well,
I didn't like how he wrote half the characters. I just didn't like, and the art was not good.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. So where I weigh in on it is that, like, I don't know. On the iFanboy scale, I think I gave it a 3. And here's why, is that, like, Simone Bianchi's art, like, physically makes me wretch. Like, I just hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hated it on Wolverine with Loeb. I understand that that's a style and that's what he does. It's just not for me.
It's really weird, because he used to be good. He was good on Seven Soldiers.
Seven Soldiers was excellent.
Yeah.
But then he changed.
I guess he's hanging out with Carlos Pacheco. It's just, I just don't like it. I don't like the coloring. I don't like the look of it. I don't like the way people look. They talk, they act, they walk. I just don't like it. Don't like it. Now, Ellis's writing, though, I see what you're saying about it being kind of Ellis-y characters, and I wonder how much of that is your just general bias against Ellis doing superhero stuff,
I don't have a bias about it. I just think he's not. You can tell the difference between.
Right. I didn't think it was awful. And as the resident X-Men fan, I didn't think it was terribly out of character. Or it was like that. Nobody would say that. Or whatever. I thought some of the interactions were okay. I did get that same pages missing feeling, both in the story, but also it just again in terms of the. I'm playing the continuity card, and you know, harp on me if you want, but. I wish Uncanny 500 came out first, because what we have is we have the X-Men established in San Francisco in a base with, you know, a status quo all set in motion, and there was no bridge between the events of the last Whedon Cassidy issue and this issue, and if Uncanny 500 is supposed to be that bridge that sets the new status quo, that hasn't come out yet. So I was left going, how did they get here? Why are they here? What is the Angel doing? How did they get that ship? What is this? And like, I left me with a lot of questions, not in a good way.
I think that this book just exists. I don't think it's...
Well, no, no.
It's tied in now.
It's tied in.
Is it?
Yeah, it's tied in. Oh. And that goes back to the thought as to whether or not you take this book and you give it the Whedon Cassidy treatment and you have it exist within a few days in between the stories of the General X universe, or if it's an X book. This is an X book. They're in San Francisco. It's the new status quo. It's the I guess there's a residence where they all live, and then there's a base across the bay and by the Golden Gate Bridge or something. Like, I don't know.
It feels to me like it's kind of a lame attempt to keep Astonishing X-Men going where it has no right to keep going. Like, well, we're selling it, so let's put people on it and see if people will keep buying it, even though it has nothing to do with.
Well, it's you don't want to give up a good thing, you know what I mean? Like, it's a top-selling book.
So. But it's over. The good thing is over.
Right. Well,
Joss Whedon and John Cassaday doing that story is over.
Right.
That was a maxi series. This has nothing to do with that, so why is it on the same title?
Well, because it's actually an ongoing.
Yeah, but you can say that all you want, but right, you're both feeling the fact that it doesn't seem right.
Well, they're running a business, and they're making a decision based on that people connect Astonishing X-Men with good, and unfortunately, I mean, I don't think I didn't have the same violent reaction Connor did, but it's definitely not the same, and it definitely bugged me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Just I remember like looking at the two creators and just going, that's a completely different tone. It's not even like they're trying to continue what was set before. It's just right. Let's do something completely different.
This
which,
probably
you know,
would
that's
have been
a
lot. It probably would have been a lot better. Like Ellis as a writer is fine. I'll go with it if he hopefully doesn't crap out like he has on Thunderbolts or whatever. But like if it, you know, just put Marcos Martin on it, and I'll be happy.
that's your solution for everything.
That's my solution for everything. Josh
wanted to talk about The Boys. It's issue number 20, and I finally get it. I know what this whole title is about now.
And what is that?
It's about what would happen in a real world if there were superheroes, and the what would happen badly is that corporations and irresponsible governments would manage it badly, and it would be a huge disaster. That's what this book is about.
Okay.
It's about the fact that the people who actually, you know, just like in the real world, a lot of the people who end up with a lot of power are selfish, awful people. That's the same way that's happening here. And, you know, you fight that with more awful people. And that's what this book is about. It's basically – there's a big – it's not a conspiracy, but like the entire superhero program is run by, you know, money-grubbing corporations and warmongers. That's the whole point of it. This book's getting better. It took a long time to get to where it's at, but it's in a really good place. I mean, it's Garth Ennis. you know, and it's actually a very different book than a lot of the stuff that Garth Ennis has done before, which I think is somewhat notable because there's been times in the past where he kind of does a formula and has a thing, and he's getting away from that in this. And it is interesting. I want to know what's going to happen next. There are a couple of really great pages in this. There's a ever since the beginning, there's the character Butcher, who's sort of the head of the boys, and he's, you know, got this mad on for superheroes, but you never know why. And so there's this whole scene where it was started in the last issue into this one. He's standing on the roof with the Homelander, who's like their Superman character or whatever. And the Homelander's just looking at him going, "What did I do to you? It's got to be something. I can tell it's something. Wife? Lover? What?" And it goes on for pages. And Butcher never says a word. He just looks at them. It's actually a really nice set of pages. But this book's gotten better and better.
Cool.
I'm glad I stuck with it.
Okay, next.
All right, next is – this is a long title – Hellblazer presents Chaz, the Knowledge, number one. Chaz is a side character from Hellblazer. He's a taxi driver who drives John around a lot. He's a London cabbie, if that, you know, means anything to you. You'll
Was
sort of
Shia
get
LaBeouf?
No. Good
Wasn't
Lord.
Wasn't he Shia LaBeouf in the movie? Wasn't he in the movie Shia LaBeouf?
Was he?
Oh, yeah, he was. He was in Constantine.
Yeah, yeah.
He was.
Well, then they got that. I didn't know the character all that well at the time. I guess it was, but it's nothing like that. Think of more like a surly 45-year-old London cab driver. It's more like that. Like, you
That's
know.
I think of Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Exactly.
Shia
and
LaBeouf.
And basically in the beginning of this, John Constantine goes somewhere on a plane, somewhere else, and you just spend a lot of time with Chaz, who's this really normal guy who's wrapped up in a really abnormal world of John Constantine. And like I said, I've been reading a lot more Hellblazer lately, so I am more familiar with the character. And basically, like, this has a lot to do with London cabbies and stuff like that, and like there's a couple of younger guys who are trying to take the test to get like their license there, and you have to memorize all the 25,000 streets in London and all the main routes and all the, like, to get your license. And it's just this fascinating otherworldly thing that they're doing, like, in the world of Hellblazer. And of course there's some magical thing that's going wrong in the meantime about it, but the actual, like, looking into what it is, like the history and of being a London cabbie and all that stuff is a really interesting part of this. It was written by Simon Oliver, who did the Exterminators.
Ah, the failure.
With the art by Goran Suzuka, I believe. Who did he do the Why the Last Man fill-ins?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a different style than that, though, just a little bit. He's changed it up a little bit. This was a really fun. It's a 5-issue mini, and if you like Hellblazer, you'll probably like this. It was good. I liked it.
Is it all about cab driving?
It might be, but I think it's going to get into the idea that, like anything in London, when you go back 400 years, there's a lot of mysticism involved with it. Sort of like, you know, when you read From Hell.
Yep.
All the stuff that's in London that you just take for granted as being normal stuff is all based in this weird Masonic, you know, superstition and magical background. So it's cool. Like that kind of thing. It was good. And then I'm going to do the third one. I'm going right through them. All right.
You.
Well, this is the shocking one. This is the shocking one.
Okay. It turns out that I got to the end of the last Walking Dead trade, and then I saw that, and that ended with 48, and then I saw that the new one that came out was 50, so I got 49, and I decided to see what it would be like to read it in issue. I just wanted to try it one time in college. It's not a big deal. So I read the last two regular issues of The Walking Dead, so this would mark the very first time that we've ever talked about a Walking Dead issue on the show.
And are you now reading it in issues?
I don't know, because I will tell you one thing. Those issues read fast.
Yeah.
I mean, lightning got to the end of the page.
Well, the trays read lightning fast. I can only imagine the issue.
Oh, my God. I literally was like, whoa, did I skip pages? And then I read the next one, and the exact same thing happened.
Yeah.
That being said, they were both excellent. The art, I mean, I don't want to – because I know so many people read in trade as well as you two. I don't want to give away too much. And not a lot has happened between these two, but they're very small, intimate stories that happen that have to do with Carl, the son. And him having to grow up very, very fast. And there's one of those...
Like the Flash's kids?
No. Well, sort of, but not bulgy.
Okay.
Not muscly.
Now, this kid, I looked it up on Wikipedia. This kid is supposed to be 7 years old.
Yeah.
No way.
He's not talking like a 7-year-old in this one. So I don't know how long it's been. Maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
But if you've read the last trade, he's been through some shit. I mean,
yes.
In addition to the shit that he's been through... He's really been through some shit.
I have no idea what you're talking about because I'm on hardcovers.
Well, I don't know where you are in the whole thing.
Prison? No, the riot gear, and then the other town type thing.
Okay, right. Yeah, so they found the prison.
Yeah,
they're in the prison. You're not so far back in the long overall timeline. Now, that could be 12 issues as far as I know.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is Charlie Adlard really, really went to town with this one. Lots of heavy blacks and faces and just very quiet suspense and pain and fear and all that stuff that this book is so good for. Nothing shocking, nothing horrible happened in them. Good. I don't know if I'll keep reading it like this because I would read on iFanboy, people would freak out about every single issue. And I thought, well, that must be fun to read an issue, but they do go fast, and so it maybe is not quite as satisfying.
Okay.
And finally, you guys read the new Hellboy?
Hellboy the Crooked Man, number one.
Crooked Man, number one of three.
Yep.
This is going to show up in a video show very soon, so we're not going to go into too much depth on it, but I just wanted to bring it up because, A, Mignola didn't do the art on this. Richard Corbin did the art.
Yep.
Richard Corbin, if anybody had to fill in, he's a very famous sort of hoarder artist, very detailed sort of stipply pen work. This was a gorgeous, gorgeous book, and yet another example, and I don't know how Hellboy can do this where nobody else can, but another example of you can jump onto Hellboy and BBRD stuff almost at any point.
Yeah.
And you can get it and you know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is Hellboy in American Appalachians in 1958, so that makes him about 10, 11 years old, but he grew up faster, so...
Like the Flash's kids?
But he did get bulky, but not in a creepy way.
Yeah. Cool.
So good.
Real quickly, Amazing Spider-Man number 564, I just love the villain in it. It's the guy whose power is to pimp cars out. It was just so much fun. It was just like that. Like it was just more fun. It was a gang riding. I just remembered it now. It was Guggenheim, Gale, and Slott all wrote it together, and it just seemed like a fun issue, fun romp.
Yeah, it was.
Was it Exhibit?
No, what was the guy's name? Is Exhibit or
Overdrive?
It was Overdrive. Yeah, Overdrive. Where he he touches a sports car and it turns all black with like these green, you know, like kind of exhaust pipes, and then he crashes the car and he jumps in a school bus and touches it and it turns black with the green kind of like Optimus Prime kind of exhaust vertical pipes, and like it was just
what a thoroughly useless power.
I know, but it was just
funny. That could be in no way based in scientific biological knowledge.
But whatever, that's comics. It's fun.
Although there was one thing about it that was bad was that in the issue, Peter Parker's roommate is off duty. He's a cop. Yeah. He's going to Yankee game. He chases down the whole crime, and then at the end of it, his like boss, the lieutenant, says, "You shouldn't have done that. You were off duty. You should have a life." And I was like, "There's no fucking cop that would say, hey, don't worry about the school bus full of kids that's been kidnapped. You were off duty. You shouldn't have been
well,
involved."
Well, he called it in. That's what he should have done. And he left his dad. He missed his dad at the Yankee game.
I was like, "There's no cop in New York City that would ever say, don't chase the school bus full of kids because you were off duty." That was stupid. Yeah.
Oh, well.
But other than that, it was a fun issue.
Yeah. All right.
I bet there's one somewhere. Like a fat guy who's about to retire who wasn't very good.
Anyway.
Those two guys from the first season of The Wire?
Yeah.
If you wanted to get any of these comics and you go to Discount Comic Book Service, they offer monthly specials up to 75% off with 40% off all of the major publishers and a flat rate shipping fee of $5.95 if you're in the United States. You can buy anything that's in previews, and they have over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stocks available for order. And you can track your orders online using www.dcbservice.com.
Yay. Not a lot of comic books came out, but luckily other folks at iFanboy.com read the books that we didn't or didn't get a chance to talk about. And so our first iFanboy user review comes from Dave Graham, who wrote about Storming Paradise number one. Storming Paradise number one. Story, he gave a 4 out of 5, an art a 4 out of 5. And did either of you guys pick this up or look at this? Or
I had not heard about this until I looked into the script right now to see Dave Graham talking about it.
Yeah, so it was written by Chuck Dixon and art by Butch Geis. It was published by DC Comics. I thought it was interesting. Dave Graham writes that Dixon weaves a compelling beginning, spinning a well thought out twist to something I was expecting to be straightforward. Geis captures a lot of detail. I can't read for some reason. The heat. Geis captures a lot of the detail in the war machines he draws, and an equal amount of drama in the people he portrays. I give this my highest recommendation for anyone who enjoys war stories in a slightly unreal world, but the appropriate uncelebratory tone.
Give his highest recommendation if he's only giving it a 4 out of 5?
The premise of this book I thought was really interesting is that it's a World War II book, but it's like almost like a what if, where what if we didn't drop the bomb on Japan, rather we invaded.
Mm-hmm.
And it just – I mean, I didn't pick it up. My store didn't get it, but I'm going to go back and look for it just because it sounds completely compelling and completely interesting.
Dixon's a war guy.
And Geiss, yeah. He's filled in on Captain America and stuff like that. He's not he's no bad chase himself either. So, yeah, wow. So I thought that was an interesting one.
What does this have to do with DC, I wonder?
It's Wildstorm.
It's Wildstorm, is it?
Air.
Yeah. Ah, interesting.
That sounds like something I might like.
Yeah. And then real quickly, I just saw on the site on iFanboy.com that Comic Dork 37 wrote about Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam, number one, which is written in
Mike Kunkel.
And he says he gives the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And he says this is a fun read for all ages with beautiful art, as always, from Mike Kunkel. If you enjoyed Hero Bear and the Kid, you will love this as well. The first issue is an origin story that gives you all the info you need to understand Shazam, as well as sets up the mysterious villain for the rest of the series. This is Tiny Titans, and then Super Friends were some of the books that Johnny DC line. They announced this book last year at Chicago. I've been waiting for it. I forgot it came out this week, so I'm gonna go back and pick it because Kunkel is awesome.
Kunkel's great. Hero Bear and the Kid was really good.
Yeah.
Right up until the fifth issue when it got weird.
Yeah. So yeah, so head over to ifanboy.com/comics, check out the other comic reviews that other people have written, and pull your comics and write reviews. Let everyone know what you think of comics.
And after you're done with that and you have a TV, you should go to the Netflix. Over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways. Blu-ray titles for the high definition, fast delivery, usually in a day to get there or to go the other way. You can get a free 2-week trial if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. We would thank you for doing so.
All right, so on the email, our first email comes from Jake, or J4K3 on iFanboy, who says that this is pretty much a question for Josh, but I'd love to know what all three of you think.
Because I haven't talked enough.
Josh said on the video podcast for Wanted that he was very uncomfortable with the story because of its themes, and that Wanted is part of the reason he doesn't read much or any of Mark Miller's other work. I agree on the topic of Wanted, but his latest books for Marvel, Kick-Ass and Marvel 1985, have been a great ride for me. I would even go so far as to say that Marvel 1985 has really reminded me why I fell in love with comics. Kick-Ass, while very mature, is nowhere near on the same level dark themes as Wanted, but is made for a great story. John Romita Jr. is also the best of this, is also at his best on this book. I highly recommend the Kick-Ass number 1 Director's Cut Edition, which I believe just came out last month. Both books have been very fun and worth the cover price.
Oh,
Jake work for Marvel?
Apparently.
Did you not listen? We talked about all those books a lot.
I mean,
Kick-Ass is fucked up. As far as I understand,
I would take issue with Kick-Ass. What did he say here? Something about the story. It doesn't have a story yet,
right? I mean, that's
no Kick-Ass is nowhere near the same level dark themes as Wanted, and has made for a great story.
Yeah, there's not a story yet. there's been a lot of scenes with no connective tissue.
Yeah,
yeah.
In 1985, though, is right now one of the best things going right now. If you ask
yes,
me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't love it. I've got a thing. I don't really like Mark Miller's work all that much for whatever reason.
You hate Scotsman.
That's not true at all. I like Grant Morrison, but you know, like a lot of people have liked it. You know, so there must be something to that. You guys like it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not Kick-Ass so much as 85.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do keep waiting for Mark Miller to do the story that, because I keep buying everything he does because I want to like the stuff, but I just don't. I really liked his Authority.
That was years ago, jeez.
I know.
Superman Red Sun? Did you like that?
I didn't love it.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to buy at least the first issue of his Image War series there with Tony Harris. I can't think of the name of it.
War Stories.
Not War Stories.
Yeah.
Because that's the...
War Heroes.
Thanks. That's War Stories is the Garth Ennis one.
Yeah. Jeez, all the war.
No, I will try that out. I mean, he keeps me coming back, so I guess he's making his money at least an issue.
All right, next email.
John says, long-time listener, first-time writer, love the show, blah, blah, blah. Thank you, John. I've been racking my brain for the ultimate question to ask you guys as fan mail discussion topic, and may have something to stump you, at least for a moment. So if you could take your dream book... Connor, Batman, Ron, Uncanny X-Men, Josh, Hellblazer. Put any creative team on these books. Who would you choose and why?
Ooh.
That's not my dream book.
Well, it's pretty close these days, I think. What is your dream book then?
I don't know.
See?
You can't even classify yourself.
Yeah.
Probably something. I mean, but the thing is, my favorite books would be something like Powers or something like that, but they're so closely aligned with the people who are working on them.
You gotta exclude any creator-owned books from this question. So Connor and I will go first, then you can think of it. All right, Connor, Batman, dream team for Batman.
You know, it's kind of a cop-out to say the dream team would be like Daredevil's current team of Rucka, Brubaker, and Lark, but That would be it.
I don't think that's
a
cop-out.
Well, it's cop-out because the two guys already wrote Batman.
Right, so what?
So that'd be the dream team. But I also think that DC should find some new blood and put them on Batman, because I can't think of anybody else really who, besides those guys. DC needs to find new writers in general. I think they need to find someone new to put on Batman.
They should get Steve Ditko.
Steve Ditko and Herb Trimpe on art.
That'd
movies.
Be great, yeah. X-Men, I mean, it's a kind of a cop-out, but it would be Claremont and Jim Lee circa 1989.
No, see, we're just going back to our favorite period of time.
But, yeah, but actually, that's challenge. I would be interested to see Geoff Johns write X-Men based off what he's been doing with Justice Society and things like that. And art-wise, that's a really good question. I mean, I loved Cassaday. I mean, he's been my favorite artist, recently. I don't like Simone Bianchi. I'm trying to think of what artists out there that I would love, Like, it's easy for me to say Carl Kershaw on Flash because I saw him do Flash and I want him to do Flash, stuff like that. But it's hard for me to... Marcos Martin. Yeah, Marcos Martin or Ryan Otley. There you go.
I'd actually, if I had to pick somebody new playing the game, I would, the only person I could think of would be Jason Aaron, to see how he would write Batman. But other than that, somebody new.
Yeah. Josh?
I don't know. I've been sitting this whole time trying to think of a title.
You're stumped.
I am. I mean, like honestly, if I were to think of like an ongoing title that I've always wanted to be reading, it'd be something like Avengers.
Yeah.
And I've been really happy with Bendis on that. So I don't know if there's anybody who would be better.
Oh, play the game.
I'm trying
to,
but
pick someone new instead of Bendis. Say Bendis died of a heart attack tomorrow. Who would you pick to replace him on Avengers?
I'm sick right now, and I'm not going to come up with an answer, and we're going to sit here in silence.
All right,
so
then, fine.
I'll try to fill in something on the message on the iFanboy.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions and you want to try to stump Josh, because apparently it's very easy to do, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. All right, on to the voicemail. We got a voicemail that ponders a question that we all struggle with.
Hey, guys. It's Sean calling out of Lansing, Michigan, and I have a question for you. What comic books in recent days would you, and I'm only asking this because I heard someone talk about finding an Invincible number one and sending it out to CGC. I have never had anything graded, but I've always wanted to, but it's hard for me to actually determine, which ones you think would be worth it getting graded. And I actually do have 1 through 3 of Invincible that I think, I was on the fence at first, but now I think I'm definitely going to send number one in. But what other comics in recent years that, some people might have been lucky enough to own, do you think they should get graded? I just happen to have a Outsiders number one that I have yet, I quit reading after number one. I didn't care for it. But anyway, things like that. If you could let me know, that would be just gravy. Have a wonderful day. Goodbye.
I think this is really fascinating because when we first started collecting comics, at least Connor and I or whatever, or at least for me, chasing down number one issues was was part of the game. Like I went and got X Factor number one, I got Excalibur number one, all that kind of stuff. I haven't thought about chasing down a number one issue in years.
Yep, not in at least 10 years.
Yeah,
I know the last time I did it was I got like the first 12 Astro Cities.
Yeah, and that's why it's funny because when I got Invincible number one, I got that moment of excitement again. I'm like, ooh, I got issue number one. But the problem is that this question is hard for us because we're generally anti CGC and anti slabbing. Because I'm of the belief that you bought the comic, you should read it and be able to read it. And encasing it in plastic to me seems to defeat the purpose. But I understand some people like to do that, and that's part of the thing. That said, I've heard The Walking Dead number one is a highly sought-after comic.
I wouldn't slab anything, no matter what it was.
There's some people on YouTube who would want to argue with you, Connor.
I'll take all those YouTube bastards on.
You can't even afford a decent shirt.
I can't. I'll fight them shirtless, like Kirk.
But I don't know. I mean, I think it's just a matter of finding a book that's valuable, that's rare, that maybe Scalp number one might be worth it in the someday. Why the Last Man number one?
Nothing in the last 20 years is going to be worth slabbing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were going to do anything, it'd have to be something that's actually rare and worth
it's the stupid sketch variant from Wizard World LA and stuff like that. Those are the ones that are highly sought after, and it's a manufactured market,
But only by 18 people.
Right, yeah, I know.
I mean, I can't imagine there's enough of a market for those to make it worth it. But if you had if you had Fantastic Four number one from 1962, I understand that. You'd want to protect that, you don't want to touch it all the time. That makes sense.
What I do find interesting is that there's a whole community of people who are all into the CGC thing, and apparently they have reputation or karma or points with their account. And so, like, if you have, like, the only 9.9 of, let's say, Invincible number one, you have a higher point value for, like, your personage. And like,
oh, good. They've set up a fucking hierarchy amongst the CGC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, like, so if you've got a bunch of books that maybe people aren't slamming because nobody cares about, you could get them slammed and you could raise your karma up.
I would love to see Alan Moore on Hellblazer. That would be awesome.
By the way, Ron was kidding about sending his Invincible to CGC. He's not
doing
it. Yes,
I'm not doing that.
No.
All right.
Go check out our New York Con show to see how we feel about...
Or go to YouTube and search iFanboy and...
CGC.
CGC, yeah. And if you have any questions for us, you can call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Hey, everybody, it's Connor, and I'm breaking into the show to let you know that last week Josh and I sat down for a chat with Paul Cornell, the writer of Captain Britain and MI-13, the Wisdom miniseries, and the upcoming Fantastic Four True Story miniseries. He's also a writer of TV and things like Doctor Who. You might recognize that one. So if you want to check that show out, you can look on the feed underneath this current show, or you can go to ifanboy.com and go to the podcast section and search out that. Now, back to the show.
And real quick reminder that summer movies are afoot. You got Hellboy, Wanted was last week. We had our special edition podcast, which you can listen to. Hellboy's coming out next week. We're going to do a special edition podcast then. Dark Knight's coming in 2 weeks. And then also, don't forget to pick up your movie tickets through Fandango and go to ifanboy.com, click on one of the links on one of the banners, and that helps us out in the long run. So we appreciate it.
And when you're there, you can check out all the great discussion we've got going at ifanboy.com. You can read Ron's Pick of the Week review. You can read all the new columnists we've got going. It's a fun time.
Happy fun time.
Fun time, happy time.
Be sure to go to ifanboy.com/store, where you can pick up all your comics and DVDs and video games, all stuff like that, through Amazon.com, through our partnership with them. So ifanboy.com/store.
Lest you didn't know about our video show, there is one, and we are on Wednesdays now instead of Saturday, so it's when the comics come out. You see the simpatico there? This past week, you will have seen the second annual barbecue show just in time for the 4th of July, where I wore a shirt that I shouldn't have. And then next week, Hellboy, because there's a movie coming out, let's be honest. We did a Hellboy show once. We're doing a further continuance of a Hellboy show. Yeah. But we promise you, there's new stuff in it.
Yeah.
Also, in addition to that, our iFanboy mini show, which comes out every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday now. That's the new schedule. You can check that out every morning. Our little 1 to 3 minute, 4 or 5 minute little comic book snack for you.
Yes. If you dig iFanboy, tell everybody about it. Tell them about the video show. Tell them to watch it. And also buy a t-shirt. Go to jinx.com/iFanboy. It's a big iFanboy logo. Show your pride at jinx.com/iFanboy.
Like we said before, you can email us at contact@iFanboy. Leave a message at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Really about anything, because we take all sorts of stuff. So there.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. If you like social networks, you can check us out at ifanboy.com/about, MySpace, Comic Space, Verb, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff can be found at that link, /about.
And if you like us, if you like what we do, if you like the show, if you like the video show, write a review on iTunes. That's where the majority of you get it. So leave a review. We've got hundreds of reviews, and we're greedy. We want more. But also, even more importantly, if you got friends who are into comics and they're not listening or watching the show, or if you want to make friends in comics and go to your comic store, use the store as a conversation point. Hey, did you check out iFanboy this week? Help us spread the word. We would appreciate
those
it.
Jackasses don't like Mark Miller. Well, yeah. Actually, it was just the one guy. Well, and then it goes on forever, and then you make new friends.
Look at the fun.
And while you're there, if your comic shop gives you a discount, then you have some extra money. You could go so far as to make a donation to iFanboy, which would be very, very helpful to us. We hope that we add a lot to your comic book reading experience and everything. So if you found it in your heart to give back a little bit, we would very much appreciate it, because this stuff don't grow on trees. Well, it does, but you get my point. So that's ifanboy.com/donations.
And thank you to everybody who's donated. And thank you for everybody who comes to ifanboy.com and posts and participates. You guys really make it. I mean, we probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. So
we definitely wouldn't. Well, actually, that's not true. We did the site for
seven years.
We like it a lot more.
5 years.
Can I also just totally, speaking of that same thing, Connor's post about the 10 things he loves about comics.
Yeah.
That was a great post. Yeah. But under that,
the comments
were
crazy.
Touched.
Yeah.
Like, I was really amazed to see all the effort and everything that people put into that. And it made for a really good read. And, like, Connor wasn't kidding when he said no negativity. I mean, yeah. that was a beautiful thing. And so if you haven't been to the site to check that out, get over there and check that out, because it was really something neat.
Yeah, it was really, really good. That was a great post. That was some good stuff. I love iFanboy.
I love to end the show so I turn the air conditioning back on.
I know, exactly. All right, so we're going to turn the air conditioning back on. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I would put Alan Moore on Avengers.
Who's drawing, though? You're obsessed
Brian
with
Brian Bolan.
Oh, okay, cool.
How awesome would that be?
That's a good idea.
You're damn right you'd buy that.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Like, I had to think about it. Yeah, I'd probably buy that.
Yeah, I would do that.
If it was a light week, I'd give it a look.
Can you imagine? That would crack the internet in half.
Okay, crack the internet in half.
Would totally. That be the biggest book in years?
It'd be up there.
It'd have to be.
Yeah, I think it would. Yeah. Better be.